The Production Expert Podcast is brought to you with the support of New Gen Audio with Mike Thornton, James Ivey, and Eli Kranzberg.
Welcome to the Production Expert Podcast number 363. It's the 1st of April 2019. I'm Mike Thornton.
I'm Russ Hughes. No, fooled you.
And I'm Eli Kranzberg. No joke. Our podcast sponsors are New Gen Audio, who provide advanced audio solutions for post-production and broadcast, including upmixing, loudness management, metering, and correction. NewGen's MasterCheck is a tool that enables you to optimize your mixes for today's music delivery services, with an emphasis on ensuring that your mixes reach the listener as intended, whatever the playback service or device. MasterCheck's codec auditioning feature allows you to instantly hear how your tracks will be affected by loudness matching algorithms on different devices and services, removing the guesswork and helping you to avoid codec distortion and minimize codec artifacts. Encoding hot mixes can often introduce true peak overs that will clip on playback. MasterCheck will detect these errors, allowing you to stay within a safe limit. You'll also be able to hear any obvious frequency masking or other artifacts and mitigate these effects at the mixing and mastering stages. Whether you're preparing the dynamics of your mix for mastering or looking to optimize your masters for digital music services, MasterCheck is an invaluable tool. You can learn more about NewGen Audio and this exclusive deal by clicking on the link in the podcast article or go to newgenaudio.com/expert.
So deals this month, check out our partner deals section on the deals page to see what sort of deals are kicking around. Certainly we've got some from a number of our partners, so check that out as we are on the turn of the month, so a load have just finished and some more are coming along. So
there's no jokes in that list though, are there?
Absolutely no jokes in that list. They're all genuine deals. Okay, let's move on to the talking points, and these are sponsored by Universal Audio.
Good morning, children. This is Fab DuPont. The Pro Tools Expert Podcast talking points are brought to you with the support of Universal Audio.
Right now, our friends at Universal Audio have their top 50 sale on. Save big on, yes, you've guessed it, the top 50 most popular Universal Audio plugins, including the Manly VoxBox, the EMT 140 Classic Plate Reverb, and the Chandler Limited Curvebender EQ. You can get all the latest prices on these and 47 other amazing Universal Audio plugins in the link in the podcast notes, down there somewhere.
Okay, first talking point. We ran a poll asking you which audio interface you used, or which sort of audio interface
flavor
do you use. We published the results over the weekend. And I must admit, personally, I was surprised at the percentages. It was over 2,000 people who responded, so it's a good answer, but
it's not like a L'Oreal
no
percentage, is it?
56% of 23 people, yeah, indeed. James, what do you think about these numbers?
I think it's very interesting. It proves, I mean, obviously there are more variants of USB
indeed
than other formats. I can't think of any FireWire 800 interfaces. Was the MBox 3 Pro 800? I don't remember. But I mean, obviously there are variants of USB.
I think some of the RME ones might have been FireWire
800. Yeah. PCI, can't think which ones that will be. I just think USB has been around a very long time now in its various formats or revisions. There's the one. I wasn't surprised, if I'm totally honest. PCI, which, let's face it, points fairly strongly at HD, HDX, or HD native.
Well, except
native and Thunderbolt native were never really picked up that big time, were they?
Well, it's the only way you can do HD native now is with the Thunderbolt. You know, obviously, if you've already got a card, a PCIe card, but in terms of what you can buy now, it's by the Thunderbolt box or Nout.
Yeah.
Term.
But HD Thunderbolt native is technically a Thunderbolt interface rather than a PCIe interface.
Correct.
So I wasn't surprised. Audio over IP, I would have thought would have had a bigger chunk, if I'm totally honest. But I think if we do this poll in 3 or 4 years, I think that AOIP chunk will be much bigger.
I suspect that the chunk would be bigger if we were asking whether you have an interface with audio over IP as an option. But as the way that you communicate between your DAW and your audio interface being, you know, the primary way of connecting, then perhaps is not so surprising that that's the essentially the smallest number at the moment.
Yeah. I think it also goes to prove that where we as a team are quite cutting edge, dare I say it, and we've forgotten about formats like Thunderbolt FireWire to a certain extent, there is still a large chunk of people using FireWire interfaces.
Yeah.
And why not? If it's still working, it still does what you need it to do.
If it ain't broke, don't fix it.
Exactly. So I wasn't surprised. It made sense to me that USB and Thunderbolt had the biggest chunks of the pie. But I say AOIP was disappointingly small, I think.
So going round the virtual table here, Eli, what of these options do you personally use?
Right now I'm using Thunderbolt, but over the years I've used everything from Nubus to FireWire to USB. I'm aging myself.
Back in the day, there we go.
Audio
Somebody's
media.
Got to have a drink.
But I've used them, all. And I remember, in the early days of the USB interfaces, they were much more prosumer. You couldn't do more than a couple of channels of I/O reliably with them with USB 1 in the early interfaces. The drivers weren't great. Obviously over the years, they've gotten a lot better and really matured with USB 2. And I remember when the first 8-in, 8-out USB interfaces came out not that long ago. And it was a big deal that they were finally able to reliably do that much, bandwidth. But, they're obviously ubiquitous. They're easy to move from system to system. They're not that expensive. They're robust now. Drivers are good. A lot of them are class compliant. I mean, I see no reason why I'm not surprised that they're that popular. FireWire, I used to have, when I first got my Thunderbolt Mac, now I still had my FireWire interface, and I got one of those Thunderbolt to FireWire 800 adapters. Yeah. And that 800 went into a hard drive chassis that had an 800 to 400 port. That went to the 400 interface, and it worked. I only used it for a couple of months, but it worked. So yeah, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. Mm. And, legacy FireWire interfaces are fine. I'm using Thunderbolt, and even that, I remember the first couple of years of Thunderbolt, there wasn't that much available, and the ones that were obviously very expensive, and well, they still are at the mid to higher end of the ranges. But it's only the last 3, maybe 4 years that I think there's really been more than just a handful of Thunderbolt interfaces to choose from. So I think they've really come, reached their maturity, and they're sort of in the sweet spot now. I guess you could say the cutting edge technology. They are now, especially Thunderbolt 3, but they're mature. The drivers are good. There's good choice. The technology is developed. I think now is a good time to get into Thunderbolt. It's not so old that it's going to be orphaned anytime in the immediate future. I think that's the good current standard. Audio over IP, I mean, I don't know that much about it, but my understanding is, it's most useful for users who are working, with multi-room setups, multiple setups in multiple rooms. They need to communicate room to room. And, that's not a large percent of average home studio kind of users. So,
you wanted to record in your front room from your studio upstairs before it was running big multi-cores, now if you've actually got Ethernet in the house, which I don't know how many do, then it's a lot easier just to be able to do that than run multi-cores around. But yes, in general, I think you're absolutely right. It's less of an issue for single operators, shall we say. So in my case, I don't use USB at all. In fact, I think I can fairly safely say I have never used a USB interface. So currently, I've got an HDX system, so that's Digilink. And on my laptop, when I go out, it's usually an Apollo Twin via Thunderbolt. So those are my two primary interfaces. Prior to that, on my laptop, it was FireWire 400 with an M-Box 2 Pro and a Digi 002 rack. And then, yeah, we start going back into all sorts of old tech. But no, I don't. I safely say I've not used the USB interface, but it's just been what's been in front of me. James, I suspect you use every single one in the list and a few more, but right now, where are you at?
Okay, so right now, on my left-hand side, I have... seriously, I do have the new Audient Sono guitar interface, which is plugged into my laptop via USB 2. You're hearing me via... Thunderbolt today, because I'm using the Orion 32 Plus Generation 3. Also down to my left-hand side, I have a Focusrite RedNet 5, which is the PCIe, as in the Pro Tools HDX to Dante converter. I've got an 11 rack, which is standard USB. the list goes on. It's fairly ridiculous around here at the moment. That's what
comes
to being a hardware junkie, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, obviously you see a lot more hardware through your facility than most of us do because of all the reviews and et cetera. But in terms of your normal, if all the review equipment all went away, you'd be left with
I would be using, on my laptop, probably a Universal Audio Apollo Twin because... they're great and they work and all that sort of stuff. And on the main studio machine, the PC, probably I'd be using my HDX card with the Orion 32 HD by Antelope because that's the stuff I actually own, which kind of sounds ridiculous. But so obviously my PC, I'm actually toying with the idea and of getting another HDX card and having the Focusrite RedNet 5, because that is also mine, bought secondhand, because I want to get more into this whole kind of Dante world, because it does make a lot of sense. The whole kind of, the sort of recording I do, multi-room, being able to have, you know, very easy, cheap connectivity to other spaces, either in the house or in the studio or whatever. Obviously, this studio, not so much of an issue. The next studio, who knows?
Yeah.
But it is something I'm looking at. And obviously, an HDX card at the moment, you can pick them up quite reasonably.
Yeah.
How much longer that that train is going to be driving, who knows? But I don't think they're going to drop support for it anytime soon.
Well,
so.
It's hardware. We get from the day they say, that's it. There's still 5 years support, so...
Exactly. But, yeah, I mean, pretty much I've used and continue to use everything on the list except FireWire. And, say, not going back that far, my Digi 003 rack was FireWire. My M-Audio 2626 was FireWire. Yeah, that's going back a long way now.
Back to 001 that was FireWire, and it was rock solid.
001 was PCI.
PCIe card.
You're right. Sorry, you're right. That was
002 was FireWire. I had one of those.
I had the 001.
I had
a Motu that was FireWire, but it was PCI.
So, of course, we've had various conversations about some people having issues with USB audio glitching, and it was very interesting and very relieving, I think, this week to see Apple announcing 10.14.4 with one of the elements being fixing this USB glitching, and certainly all the comments we've been seeing around, all the comments we've seen have all suggested that the OS update has fixed the problem. It's interesting because when we tested the Mac Mini 2018, we couldn't create any of the problems that have been reported. And then we talked to a number of the interface manufacturers, haven't we, James, who've told us that essentially they're not seeing it, they haven't seen an increase.
Without actually naming names, no one who's got back to me has said, oh yeah, oh blimey, avoid the new like the plague or anything like that. It's been, we've not seen a significant increase in support requests of anyone using a particular new or old machine to give us to raise concern about any particular chip, T2, T3, or otherwise.
Indeed. But it's good to see that Apple have presumably found an issue and resolved it. So that's also good news for anybody looking to stick with the USB format. In terms of future-proofing, where would we sit?
I don't think there's such a place.
Yeah. I'm sure glad that the Thunderbolt 3 to Thunderbolt 2, you know, solution is pretty simple. I mean, they have these simple adapters, so that
they're £50.
Yeah, they're expensive.
It's Apple,
for sure.
Isn't it?
Yeah. But you know, that gives me a little bit of a good feeling that you know, for now that we're okay with the different variations of Thunderbolt.
Yeah, I don't think. Certainly, I've got connectors, and say, although those £50 connectors with a fruit logo on are expensive, they do work both ways as well.
Hmm.
They are bidirectional. So from the PC at the moment, or depending on how I'm running it, I'm running Thunderbolt into an Apollo 16 blackface, which is Thunderbolt 2, then daisy chained into a 16, which is Thunderbolt 3, and then back into Thunderbolt 2 for the Orion.
Wow.
It's expensive in all these little adapters and sort of budget block type things, but it works. I've also had to do something similar for my laptop into various other Thunderbolt interfaces, but they seem to work. Say, I think I've got 200 quid worth of those things now, which just seems ridiculous for four very, very short cables. But, hey, that's the way the apple gets eaten or something. That's some of the terrible metaphor.
But, I mean, in terms of USB, there's the sort of announcement of the Presonus Studio Life 64S mixer.
Yummy, by the way.
Which is just bonkers in terms of 64 channels of I.O.
Let's refine that a little bit. 32 mic pre's.
Okay.
Yeah. But 32 mic pre's, I think it's 16 analog outs. Don't quote me on that one. What the new version gives you is AOIP, gives you AVB, I want to say. Yes, I'm sure it is. I mean, but as soon as, you know, this came out, I went, and obviously various Facebook friends posted this as well. I went, hello, that's a lot of bang for the buck. You know, 64 channels, even if 32 of them are AOIP, so what? That's that's serious bang for the buck.
James, you know. Oh, yeah, no, it is AVB.
AVB.
It is AVB, because obviously Presonus is pretty well...
In that camp.
In that camp.
But it's a hell of a machine.
Mm.
And very tightly, incredibly tightly integrated with Studio One.
Yes.
Who's not going to love
that? Surprise,
surprise. Yeah.
I mean, there's an awful lot one's able to do over USB with that unit. Very interesting. So there's plenty of life in the USB format. Okay, second talking point. Shut down or just let it sleep?
No, it's not. Okay.
So let's go down round the virtual table and establish what each of us do. Eli, what do you do in terms of shutting down or putting to sleep?
Well, I'm primarily using an iMac, and you know, as a desktop computer, and I'm old school. I shut down at the end of each night, and I have that old school mentality of, like, I'm from the old days of, you know, clearing out the RAM, flushing the RAM, that when you quit apps, they don't always release the RAM properly, and that nothing like a restart will really flush the RAM properly. And also, you know, in the old days, some audio interfaces didn't like sleep mode. The drivers wouldn't respond when you woke it up from sleep. So I just always shut down at the end of each night. Now, I used to have a laptop, which I still do, but I don't really use it anymore. And that one, I would just put the lid down, but I didn't really use that one for audio. So you know, to me, that's the big, you know, defining criteria is whether it's for audio or not. I just always had this mentality that shutting down was better to get a fresh restart in the morning.
I must admit, looking at the article, I wasn't aware of the amount of things that went on under the hood it could do whilst it's asleep. Yeah. I mean, I certainly was aware of that some of the maintenance functions that take place, which again has been in the past one of the arguments for not turning your Mac off, because there's various maintenance programs that run at like 2 a.m. or something. And that's been an argument as to why, you know, turning your computer off at the end of the day isn't as good an idea. I think it's pros and cons in reality, but I certainly wasn't aware of all these things that it can actually do.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of them are cloud related, you know, push notifications and, you know, emails and calendar events and things. So I'm not so concerned about, I don't feel I'm missing out on that. In terms of backing up the automatic backups, I'm also old school with that. And we were talking about before. I mean, I like controlling when it's going to back up and what it's going to back up. I don't like it doing it for me. So I don't feel like I'm missing out on that end. But yeah, I also was surprised at the amount that it does do when it's.
James, what about you?
My machines get turned off for holidays and a public and my own. And that's about, and if they need to do a restart, that's about it. My laptop, the lid gets shut down at the end of every night. My PC, the screen gets turned off, and that's it.
So do you leave your audio interfaces on also the whole time?
No, they go off. When I shut, I do, if I'm in the middle of a session that I'm thinking, do you know what? This is fairly heavy going. It's working right now. Let's just leave it on. And let's face it, we've all had those sort of sessions. I do leave everything on overnight if I know I'm coming back to it the next day. But I turn off all my interfaces and, I mean, I turn the desk off every night. And most people say, oh, my God, you turn the console off? I said, yeah, I'll turn this off for lunch. It's a modern console. It's not like turning off Necessella or Neve.
No.
An old one, you know, this is going to come back. One of the major criteria when buying said console, oh, someone's taking a drink now again, aren't they? one of them was, I want to be able to turn it off. I don't need an air conditioning plant to be able to run it, and I want to be able to turn the thing off. The console gets turned off more than the computer. The only thing that acts for my heating overnight is my PC.
So that's your Frostat.
Yes. Yeah, that's pretty much it. The laptop, just the lid comes down and that's it, and it can do what it needs to do.
And then what about all your external hard drives? Do you leave those on all the time too?
Haven't got any.
Okay.
Because they're all inside the Mac.
Whoa!
They're all inside the PC.
Yeah, one of the benefits that you can put everything inside the box.
And any kind of USB sort of travel drives just get left connected overnight.
Because the corollary to this question, though, for users who do use external drives, is do you leave those on as well?
Interesting. There is an interesting, let's use the word bug, because, hey, I'm going to say issue. No, it's definitely a bug, trust me.
Challenge,
what am I running? High Sierra 1013.6. If you leave a USB drive attached and your machine goes to sleep, every, I think it's 13 minutes, it will try to eject the drive, fail to eject the drive, because obviously it's still attached, and produce the error message. Meaning that the following morning, you come down and you're either restarting your machine, or you find about 2,000, you spat your drive out incorrectly, do you want, it might be damaged, blah, blah, blah. Yeah. You know the error that I mean.
Indeed.
And you go, click, 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 click,
click, click, click,
click, yeah, through your first cup of tea, and then a few more click, click, clicks later, then they all go away.
James, do you know there's a little utility or script called Keep Drive Spinning? I use that to keep my USB drives. I have all external USB 3 drives to keep them always spinning, even when I'm not accessing them, just to avoid exactly what you're describing.
How would that work with SSDs?
I'm not sure.
Because there ain't no spinning.
No, there ain't no spinning. So that's with SSDs that it's doing
yes.
that. Yeah.
Yeah, it's very frustrating.
Because that was always the issue with putting machines to sleep, is when you had rotating drives, is they would spin down, and then would they spin?
Yeah, would they come
back
to life again?
Well, when you wake it up, you know, does it all come back? In which case, the computer then complains bitterly. But in terms of what I do, the answer is I do both. So my studio machine, I'm with you, Eli. Good old fashioned, turn it off. In fact, as I've discussed before, I have a big one central on-off switch, a light switch, that when everything's shut down and I'm leaving the room, light gets turned off, power gets turned off, all machines off. The laptop, by and large, I just close the lid. Now, it is, I think it would be fair to say that I use the laptop much less for audio. It's only when I go out on the road. And I probably would think, I don't know, if I had issues when I was setting up, I would almost certainly restart just for good measure. But no, the only time I tend to restart the laptop is when it decides it's not playing, you know, and it's the, oh, let's turn it off and turn it back on again. But it's interesting on that issue with this, because there are some people who say that you need to turn the computer off to clear things out. And also, it kind of just clears things out. I think, like you were saying, is if the RAM doesn't flush properly, Eli, and all the rest of it, shutting down and restarting, make sure that you are sort of starting with a clean sheet, as it were.
Right.
Interesting though. I very much go down the. I use two machines in the studio. Full stop.
Yeah.
I have my, let's call it my media machine, which is my PC these days, and it does Pro Tools and media-y type stuff, so Photoshop and Premiere, and the kind of the auxiliary programs that support those. Obviously, it does Pro Tools and it does kind of RX-y type stuff. It does audio and video. That's what that machine does. It does not see email. Whereas my MacBook Pro, I mean, it's running Pro Tools right now because when I do a review type video, I'm usually running two Pro Tools systems, one actually doing the review and the other one recording the doing of the review, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
And also the voiceover. That machine currently has, you know, Outlook, Firefox, Safari, Chrome, Messages, Skype, Stickies, iLock, Pro Tools, iTunes, System Preferences, Excel, you know, all running at the
Tom
same
Cobbley
time.
And all.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Audio MIDI setup's running. Yeah. Torpedo Remote is running. You know, that machine is doing a lot of things in a very kind of, should we call it a dirty way? Because that stuff's been on a very, very long time. This machine hasn't been restarted in weeks. So it's a very powerful machine, and either I'm abusing it to high heaven or it's just sitting there going, yeah, come on, I can do that.
Yeah.
You know, I'm so old school, I even usually quit apps when I'm not going to be using them for a while. A while meaning like a portion of the day.
Wow, if I did that with my web browsers, I'd be permanently reloading pages.
Well, I leave the web browser on, but yeah. You know.
Okay, I think we'll move along the car a little bit.
The Pro Tools Expert Podcast is created using Source Connect Now from Source Elements. Register now for your free account at now.source-elements.com.
If you have ever tried to do interviews over the internet with apps like Skype, you'll know how hit and miss the audio quality and connection can be, and even on a good day, it isn't really good enough for a long-form interview. We now use Source Connect Now, which offers ISDN-equivalent quality audio using a Chrome browser, no software to install. To get your free account, follow the link in the podcast notes.
Okay, so Find of the Week is next, and this is sponsored by our friends at RSP Audio Solutions. And they're running a sale of Avid B-Stock items at the moment. These are the sorts of things that open box items. They're all in near perfect condition and, of course, most importantly, carry a full warranty. And it could include things like an S3, the Pro Tools dock, the Artist Mix, an HDX card, James, an HDIO.
I'm actually emailing Russ as we speak.
That's Russ at RSPE, in case you're getting confused. Not our Russ, another Russ, yes. Or something like an HDIO 16x16. But, of course, they are being B-stock limited quantities, so when they're gone, they're gone. If you want to check out what's currently on the list, then follow the special link in the podcast article. So, find of the week. James, what's yours? It's not something I've heard about.
Oh, this thing's brilliant. Scrolls to web page to be able to talk about it informatively. Where the heck is it? There it is. Right. So, I was switched on to this by a fellow media colleague. I was going to go to the photography and video show in Birmingham a couple of weeks ago, and for whatever reason didn't, just mainly through time. He came back when I saw him. He's one of the photographers who does cheerleading with me, and he said, I've bought this brilliant thing, and it's called a loop deck. All one word, LOOPDECK. And it is basically a controller for your media software. So I'm going to reach down and grab it in a true Blue Peter format. And for those of you who don't know what Blue Peter is, Google it. this is about, it's slightly smaller than a conventional kind of QWERTY keyboard, a number and QWERTY keyboard. And on it, it has lots of useful functionality for video and for stills. So contrast, clarity, shadows, highlights, vibrance, saturation. Lots of programmable buttons and scroll wheels, and as a proper, really nice kind of weighted but not heavy jog shuttle wheel. It's just a really nice controller to be able to get the most out of your video and photography apps. It works for lots of different things, but it does work very well with the Adobe suite. It is a very, very cool piece of kit. Don't think you're getting an artist color or anything like that. It's not that level of build quality. It is quite, I'm not going to say Chinesey, but it's definitely a keyboard rather than a really nice weighted controller that would cost you a couple of grand. But this thing is brilliant. You just run it up, plug it in via USB. It's genius. And if you need to do quick editing for video or photography, it's awesome. Absolutely brilliant.
Eli, what's yours?
My colleague Andy Cherna, who contributes to Logic Pro Expert, sometimes turned me on to this app, Symbolic Linker. It's a $2.79 app on them. You know it?
Yeah, I do.
It looks great. It's on the App Store. And yeah, the problem with, you know, Dropbox and Google Drive and all that is they want you to sync what's in their custom folders. But, you know, you want to sync stuff that's all over your hard drive or drives. So this is an app that makes it easy by just right-clicking, creating a symbolic link. Then you move the symbolic link into the proprietary download folder. That way you can sync to the cloud anything anywhere on your hard drive. And it's particularly great for backing up media, you know, your samples, your instruments, your loops, that kind of stuff, you know, where you don't want them, where they have to be in a specific location. So you leave them where they are and just create the symbolic links very easily and manage them that way.
Yeah, I mean, a symbolic link in Apple speak is a leg up from aliases, because aliases wouldn't do what you need to do here. It just wouldn't work. But these are kind of aliases on steroids, or almost sometimes some people talk about it being a hard link. But certainly, as you say, for all these sort of cloud storage folder systems like Dropbox and the like, it does mean that you can effectively leave your content where you would like it to be on your various hard drives, but know that it will get backed up onto the cloud, because effectively there are these folders in the Dropbox folder, for example, that are pointing at the media where you would prefer to keep it. So, I used symbolic links because there were some other various things that I used to do to trick Apple. So, for instance, I wouldn't have my mail folder on my actual internal hard drive. It would be on a file server on the system. And Symbolic Links was the only way that I could trick that. And similarly with iTunes, you know, back in the day, as it were, Apple's a little bit more cooperative about these things these days. But yes, indeed.
Yeah.
Mike, how about yourself?
Okay. mine has got nought to do with tech, other than the fact it was almost certainly edited and mixed on Pro Tools. And that's the latest season of AO. Now, if you're a fan of
Is that Northern for something?
No. If you were a fan of something, the series called Stranger Things, AO was another sort of that sort of thing inclined. Very, very cleverly written, very clever. Kept you thinking and on the edge. You couldn't sort of predict the narrative. And of course, this is AO season two, and we've just finished binge watching it as a family. So if you like that sort of thing, then do check it out on Netflix. So something to enjoy. And finally, before we go, if you read our article on the Reconnect plugin that promises to fix bad cable choices using machine learning cable restoration, and not notice the date of which we published the article, then let me put you out of your misery now. It is, in fact, our April Fool's joke. So on that little bit of revelation, it's good night from me.
It's good night from me.
And good afternoon from me.
Nicely done. Good night.